Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to Team Broadcasting.
You're listening to Team Broadcasting.
You're inside the Cafe Mahogany with your host, TCN Cook, the place where we talk about what we don't talk about. For those of you that could not join us inside the cafe, we still want to hear from you. The number to call is 516-595-8113. So pull up a seat, order a drink, and tell us what's on your mind.
About the millennials, and have we let them down? And there's no one better to talk about such a sensitive topic than the queen of Blog Talk Radio. Tiki, are you there?
I am here, and I don't like that title. We're going to drop the queen of anything.
That's my thing.
Yeah, no. Keep that in your head. I don't want to hear it.
Oh,
yeah, we're going to talk about black millennials, to be specific.
Black millennials. All right.
Yeah, black millennials. How was your week, man?
Oh, it was wonderful. I'm a little burnt out, to be honest with you. I think all of this March Madness has got me mad.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean it's a little bit overkill, but I'm still excited. I think Oklahoma is still in it. Am I right?
I don't know. I have to check.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I don't have all 16 in my head, but you know.
Okay. Yeah.
I got my eyes on Duke and Kentucky. You know.
Yes. It should be quite a matchup if we can get there. Yeah. That'd be nice.
If we can get there.
So tonight, you know, we're talking about the black millennials and a very interesting blog talk for those of you that do follow and those of you who may not. Jason Whitlock, very controversial brother on topics specifically of race, is a ESPN. Tiki, is he a broadcaster or just a reporter? Or what is his official title with ESPN?
I think he's a blogger. He writes columns. He used to write sports columns for Fox Sports.
Okay.
That's when I first became familiar with him. I've never particularly been a fan of all of his thoughts, all of his columns. Actually, I disagree with him a great deal. But knowing, as we do, that no one person is all one thing, that we are multifaceted, and we can't be wrong all the time. His monologue a couple of weeks ago on how black millennials have been let down by Generation X and the baby boomers is something that resonated with me. So I'm looking forward to getting into that later on in the show, certainly.
Right. And I'm with you. I definitely, you know, I felt that way, and I felt that way for a long time. So I think the topic, this particular topic, comes at a very interesting time. being that ever since we started from the inception of this show, we've been battling with what seems to be the number one show in America right now on Wednesday nights, which is Empire. As those of us who follow would know that Empire is now off for the season and on hiatus. So, you know, we have all the crowd to ourselves tonight. But I, you know,
you've been battling with Empire. The show hasn't been battling with Empire.
Well, I would like to believe that we've been battling with Empire. I like to believe that the show's been battling with us, but we know better. So, you know, and yes, I have been battling with Empire. But, you know, but, you know, looking at tonight's topic, and has, you know, Generation X let down the millennials? It's interesting because around that show Empire, there's so much sensitive about that show and about whether people should or shouldn't allow their children to watch. And, you know, it brings on another issue about what age are you considering today's youth to be children. I think the 12-year-olds today are so much more advanced than we were at 12. But at the same time, I've always had the position that, you know, my child could come across anything on television and it's not going to encourage them to turn out to be that which what they're watching. So I think, you know, it starts once again, and it's so cliche for us to that notion of it starts in the home, but it truly does. And, you know, and I believe that if our children are parented correctly, we have to release them out in the world eventually, and they're going to run across and see some things. But hopefully we've instilled in them some things that, you know, makes them make better and more wise decisions rather than being afraid of blocking them from anything. That's just, you know, my position on it.
Yeah. For those of you that are joining us for the first time, you know, it's usually our habit on this side of the show to do some kind of lightweight stuff and get into the topic after our first break, but it sounds like we're jumping right into it. And most of you that know me personally know that I don't have children, so I certainly don't want tonight's conversation or any of your takeaways from me to coming off sounding like I am an expert in that area, because I am not. But I do encourage you, particularly those of you with children, to call in after we come back from the first break later on and share your thoughts about raising Black millennials. Black millennials are a product of, they're the babies of Generation X, and they're the babies of, they're the grandbabies of the baby boomers.
Right.
So it's going to be, there's a lot of information to share about what Jason Whitlock, his monologue, what he had to say about how post-civil rights movement of 1965 and that whole era of the 1960s, that we have let down an entire generation. We have failed them in some very fundamental ways. So, I'm looking forward to that. You know, Tuk, I actually spent this last week battling pneumonia, so I'm a little nasal.
Yes.
So I want our listeners to forgive me. I feel whole and hearty, if I don't sound it. But this is a topic I am certainly looking forward to getting into tonight.
I thank you so much for your efforts in coming through tonight, considering so many of us, including your esteemed co-host, would have bowed out in such an issue once again, because the deepest cough, I feel like I'm dying. So they say us men can't take much. So once again, you know, thank you for being here considering pneumonia, and you made it for this ever so important show. Because it definitely
Last week while I was battling it, I did die. We didn't have a show. So I did the same thing any sick person would do. But I'm better now. It's no longer an issue, I hope. And we can have a good show. But, yeah, so we weren't here. We took a week off. I'm better. We're better. We're back.
Well, I'm glad you're feeling better. Everybody, get ready. We're going to get deep into this conversation. As soon as we get back from the break, we'll see you in 2 and 2 back on Cafe Mahogany. We'll be right back.
You're inside the Cafe Mahogany with your host, TCN Cook, the place where we talk about what we don't talk about. For those of you that could not join us inside the cafe, we still want to hear from you. The number to call is 516-595-8113. So pull up a seat, order a drink, and tell us what's on your mind.
Are you a business owner looking to expand your business nationally? Well, join the hottest internet radio network, Team Broadcasting. Advertise your business or organization on this program or others. Choose from a winning lineup: Selma Toro's Baseball, Toro Talk, Bridging the Gap, The Lonely Hearts Cafe, and Cafe Mahogany. We look forward to partnering with your business to help you grow, whether it's locally, regionally, or nationally. Contact us for more information, 334-505-1940, or send us an email at yourteambroadcasting.com, 334-505-1940, or yourteambroadcasting.com. We look forward to partnering with you.
You're inside the Cafe Mahogany with your host, TCN Cook, the place where we talk about what we don't talk about. For those of you that could not join us inside the cafe, we still want to hear from you. The number to call is 516-595-8113. So pull up a seat, order a drink, and tell us what's on your mind.
Back here at Cafe Mahogany, the millennials have us baby boomers and Generation X. Have we let them down? Tiki, we it seems that from a societal standpoint, that, you know, just about everything that goes on with the millennials from a public standpoint, we're pointing the finger about in comparison of, you know, how much better things were. And I think that's natural in some sense that we'll always be in comparison from one generation to the other. But the respect factor seems to be a major issue. And Jason Whitlock was, you know, attacking the angle of the respect that our millennials have, not only for others, but for themselves. And a lot of it, primarily, in his opinion, was that simply that we hadn't done our jobs in teaching our children our history, and we've waited heavily on allowing, whether it be the public school system or for other non-blacks or African Americans, so be it, to teach our children our own personal history. So I found that very compelling.
As did I. Jason Whitlock touched on some very fundamental things. I have to agree with him about. Mm-hmm. And he was very specific in pointing out Dr. King's and Malcolm X, their goals, their strategies during the Civil Rights Movement. Right. And the fact that they weren't fighting feelings.
Right.
They were fighting, they were marching against policies. They didn't care if white people in America liked them. They didn't
right.
care if whites in America used the N-word. It
right.
was not a part of their strategy to march about someone's thoughts and beliefs about them as people.
Right.
What Dr. Martin Luther King and the leaders of the Civil Rights Movement and Malcolm X and his followers, what they were very specific about, fighting policies, fighting the legalities that oppressed us.
Okay.
And he pointed out that post the Civil Rights era, having gained that small battle of the right to vote, we abandoned, we took that small victory and ran with it. Like, it's over. We have everything we want now. Our work is done. There's no need to do anything else. There, we just need to wait for the dream to be fulfilled. And we failed to teach our children some very fundamental things about how to keep your eye on things like what's happening right now. Policies are changing about the right to vote in this country.
Right.
We're regressing in that era. States all over the United States are
right.
experiencing law changes about
right.
how we vote, about our rights to vote in this country.
Right.
And that is a regression, and that is a policy. Those are policies. Those are things that we can affect change to. Those are things that we can stand up and fight about. I cannot march and fight against somebody calling me a nigger.
Right. Exactly.
Because I really don't care about how anybody thinks of me. I don't care
right.
that you think I'm a nigger.
Right.
I care that you try to do something that oppressed me legally, that you
right.
try to take away rights that I should have. So those are the kind of things that you will see me protest or march about. But for black millennials, we, Generation X, and our parents, the baby boomers, failed to ensure that in teaching about the Civil Rights Movement and teaching about what's important in this country, we failed to stress policy. That's
exactly.
been our failure.
Right. And, you know,
so,
I think... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, well, I mean, I was, you know, I think exactly what you're saying and what he was saying. You know, you're looking at the millennials, and it's ever more reflective than the incident that's going on at the University of Oklahoma right now. And it is exactly what Mr. Whitlock was referring to, in the sense that, you know, instead of protesting about the laws and, you know, getting it together from a professional's and you know, a more impactful sense, and not allowing those fraternities to even organize to who established themselves with such hatred or whatever the case is, they're having a kumbaya moment. And, you know, and a bunch of different races coming together, and all of that is great. But you're rallying behind your feelings behind the matter. And,
right.
You know, the feelings behind the matter is not going to have, one, any impact. Two, there won't be any. It will still be nothing more than the addressing of your particular feelings on the matter. And your feelings are hurt, and we want you to know that we all don't feel that way. But there is nothing concrete. So it's just, you know, I mean, it's very reflective in the sense that, you know, and to be honest with you, I don't really think that my generation, Generation X, did, you know, put forth a full-hearted effort in even teaching the next generation on not only what to protest, but how to go about doing it. I really don't think the millennials even know how to go about doing it, because when there is an issue such as the Oklahoma issue or any other issue, someone is so quick to call on, you know, whether it be Jesse Jackson or someone else from the baby boomer era, you know, to come in and step in and aid them in their protests. So,
well, one, we don't want to generalize, because what we're talking about here does not is not true of everybody. Okay, so this is a widespread issue, but there are exceptions. And I put the timeline on our page for a reason. Generation X is from 1965 to 1980. So Generation X was, and I'm not trying to absolve us. I am an Xer. I'm not trying to absolve us of any responsibility, but in 1965, in the midst of the Civil Rights Movement, we were babies, essentially. All the way to 1975, you're what? From 1965 to 1975, you're only 10 years old. Right?
Right.
So what we had to teach any of the millennials was what we learned from the baby boomers, from essentially our parents.
Right.
So when we talk about what was taught, I don't know, and we would have to talk to someone from that age group. And for instance, a Reverend Jesse Jackson.
Right.
Did the baby boomers, did the participants of the civil rights movement, did they automatically assume that Generation X would learn what they needed to know by association? Just
sure,
because they were our parents?
Right.
You know, there's some kind of way we would soak it up like a sponge by some kind of strange osmosis.
Right.
Because I remember, I remember being told the stories of what happened. So here I am. I'm born in 1971. I grew up on what happened in Selma. I grew up listening to stories about the oppression, the segregation, the whites-only fountains, the black-only toilets, things of this nature. But what I did not get was specific instruction on what my oppression looked like and what it is I should fight. Should I be fighting my feelings or policy. So if these things sound horrible to me, horror is a feeling, right?
Right.
So I'm going to fight the things that make me feel bad, because nobody told me I needed to fight the things that were being written into law. So as a Generation X-er, Generation X-er, how would I know if, unless I am self-taught, unless I have someone in my life that has this instruction, this knowledge, this awareness, how would I know to share that with my child that is destined to be a millennial?
Right.
When millennials are born, any child born after 1980.
I think that's so on point. It really is. Like, you know, most things that we, you know, we attempt to pass down through generations, and as you said, soak it up, you know, in our passing of the torch. We hope that, you know, that who we pass it on to will soak it up and be productive with it and go forward. I think there, you know, I'm a Generation Xer, so you know, and part of it, at least from my experiences, is that so many of us, and as you said, it doesn't pertain to all, but my experience has been we went through that generation, and our particular generation, and that identification of, you know, as society tries to constantly define us, whether it be from, you know, Negro to Afro-American to Black to African-American, so much of passing and accepting the torch, society had convinced so many of us that we were problem causers in doing such. So it was an actual turnoff for a certain sector of our generation that they didn't want to ruffle any feathers, or, you know, and were convinced because we allowed others to teach us our history that those who are protesting are seeking to cause trouble. And there's just been a sector of folks who simply didn't want to cause any trouble. And that was the wrong mentality, because they couldn't do better because they weren't taught better.
Well, I will say this, and the people that know me are probably hearing, tired of hearing me bring it up. But this year is the 25th anniversary of the 1990 protests in Selma. And those protests had to do with affecting change in the school system. There was a tracking system where basically students were placed in grade levels 1, 2, or 3 based on geographic location in the city, which, you know, poor children were in lower levels, and, you know, people from affluent side of Selma, which would then be predominantly white, were placed in higher levels in school.
Okay.
Well, that protest had to do with fighting policies. We were fighting a systemic injustice.
Right.
And we had people during that time that graduated before us, that were coming up after us, and people in our own class that did exactly what you're saying. They
right.
shied away from that protest. They didn't
right.
want to be involved with the troublemakers. They didn't
right.
want to be identified with those people that were making all the trouble. We are happy. We were okay. What are y'all doing? Type mentalities were very pervasive during
right.
that time. And ultimately, the movement became something that a lot of us didn't agree with. But by and large, the students that began from the very beginning of that movement They were fighting systemic injustices. They were fighting policies. They were fighting things that they knew were fundamentally wrong, you know? Right. And they suffered a lot of criticism. We suffered a lot of criticism about that.
Right.
But I'm going to tell you, in Jason Whitlock's monologue on Black Millennials and how we let them down, there's something he said that did resonate with me, and that is, as a child coming up, I could not understand. I had to be convinced over and over again the necessity for integration.
Right?
I didn't. That's not something I could understand. You know, I was always like, why? Why do we need integration? Why do we need, you know? And I get it. Ultimately, as an adult now, I can look back and say, you know, if there's funding, if there's money, if there were comforts to be given in the, during that time, it was given to white schools.
Right.
And Black students had older school books, older textbooks. They had fewer resources. And so that was the driving force behind integration. But I think a lot of people get that whole ideal wrong nowadays, you know, to think, oh, you know, I want my children to go to school where there's Black and white people. Like, I just, nobody can teach me my history better than someone of my own color that gives a damn about my history.
Right.
So you have to care enough about learning my history in order to teach it to me.
Mm.
For me, with educators today, that's the thing I think, and it's not everybody, and I don't want to get on this show and generalize. There are some very good Black educators out there, and some in Selma that I'm particularly proud of. But by and large, the attitude and the mentality about how and what we need to teach our children needs to change.
Right.
We don't own the things from an educational perspective that we
right.
need to own. We're too busy worrying about integrating when we should be more about educating.
Right. Hmm. It reminds me a lot of, you know, another subject, but in the sense that, you know, do we, as a people, do we have the courage? And I really do believe that a lot of it is a courage issue. Do you have the courage to stand when your position will be unpopular? And, you know,
I think we are more inclined to stand when our feelings are affected.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So.
And you're right. I mean, and that's what we're talking about, you know, feelings versus, you know, standing
policy.
For policy, you know. But at the same time, you know, you're acknowledging that, yes, your feelings in Oklahoma, you're gathering because your feelings are hurt. So, you know, the glaring issue is that a stand is still not being taken. And your feelings have been identified as being hurt.
So, and the SAEs, you know, their whole chant on the bus, those things those are markers just to show that we really haven't progressed concerning race relations in America. But I have to be honest when I say that kind of stuff really, it doesn't bother me because I know it exists. And because I know it exists, I can acknowledge that it's there, but I don't lose sleep over it. During the Trayvon Martin thing, when Trayvon was murdered by that coward, George Zimmerman, there was a lot of dialogue on social media about just race relations, period. And what I found is that, and I have so many inbox conversation, what I found is I had no desire to explain my blackness. And there were white people that did not understand the anger, the hurt, the resentment, and they wanted an explanation about why y'all feel this way. You know, he was this and he was that. And, you know, and I don't want to explain my blackness to you because I really don't care how you feel about me. And having to explain to you what should be understood from the level of humanity will not help get us there. That is not going to bridge any, you know, relations between us. At all. So I think we have I think we have people that are calling in that would like to comment. So I think we have people that are calling in that would like to comment too. So I think we have Sean on.
Hey, Tiki and Tuke. Thanks for taking my call. This conversation to me is quite interesting. I think I do agree to some extent that we have failed our millennials, but not just in the area of how to boycott, how to protest, what to attack. I think my personal opinion on the matter is that we as a people don't do a very good job of preparing necessarily children for adulthood. I heard a comedian say one time, and I don't just mean in protesting, I mean in general, period, point blank.
In general,
I heard a comedian say one time, we talk to high school seniors after they graduate and say, what do you want to do with your life? And 3 days ago, they had to raise their hand to go to the bathroom.
Wow.
And so that, I think, is kind of a downfall in general for our culture. We don't generally talk to our kids about how to prepare financially, how to set up trust, how to take care of insurance, how to, you know, that's something that, so every generation almost has to start over from scratch rather than building upon the previous generation. So with that being said, I think there's a dichotomy here. I think that, number one, we generally don't do a good job of passing down knowledge from generation to generation, number one. And number two, you kind of have to wonder how many of the previous generations were intimately involved enough to know the specifics to pass down to the next generation.
So, Sean, let me share this with you then, Sean. So consider this. And like you were saying, we don't teach them enough about what they need to know about finances, about insurance, about a plethora of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I could recall correctly, you and I learned about personal finances together.
We did.
And I am a few years older than you, correct?
Correct.
So there was a gap. As a Generation Xer, you and I both learned some things as adults that we would have been expected to teach our children. And being that we are both childless, I would say we were ill-equipped to do so. Is that a fair statement?
I think so.
Okay. So point that we are making with this show, you know, going back to foundation, to fundamentals, when we take it all the way back to the Civil Rights Movement, that's because Generation X begins in 1965.
Mm-hmm.
So if from inception we have failed to gain knowledge in certain areas, there's no way we can pass it along. We can't pass along what we don't have.
Agreed.
Now, to be fair, my grandparents, my mother's parents, paid cash for everything. The baby boomers are the credit card society. They are the generation of credit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So our grandparents, not the boomers, their parents had a better understanding about financial matters than they passed on to the boomers.
Agreed.
And the baby boomers had nothing at all to pass along to us.
Agreed.
We had to go back and find it.
Right.
So what is it that we give black millennials if we don't have it?
Right. And that's the problem. We don't have it. Saying I don't think, and to another extent, I think we're also at a bit of a disadvantage in what we are attacking, what policies we are attacking, because
go ahead.
Well, and here's why I say that, because. And during the civil rights movement, they had policies that they were attacking that were out in the open. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Why do this person have to sit at the back of the bus? Why can't this person sit at this counter? Why can't they drink from this water fountain? We have behind the scenes stuff that unless you're in the know, you don't know about. We have the your credit isn't good enough, so you can only qualify for this loan when you're buying your house. And by the way, in a year, your interest rate is going to balloon up. We have that type of stuff that unless it's someone that's intimately involved behind enemy lines, so to speak, we don't even know that we're being targeted in some instances.
Well, I'm going to challenge you on that, Sean, and what you're saying is just absolutely true. But I'm also challenge you on another thought. There's a huge policy out there that everybody knows about, but it has been tagged on to our morality, so we don't fight. And that's the war on drugs.
Right.
There, Clinton, President Clinton, and very rarely do you hear me say something about a Democratic president.
First time in 10 years.
Clinton did the black community, by and large, the greatest injustice since Jim Crow. The Clinton administration, with the war on drugs, has incarcerated more black men than all of the time the black men that were enslaved. Do you know how big of a number that is? The war on drugs, Sean. And there's a policy out there that we can fight, but we won't. Because it's a war on drugs. And some of us feel like that's necessary. Even though we have brothers and cousins and a plethora of people from our neighborhood that we know that are incarcerated, we sit on our asses when it comes to the war on drugs. I only have one ask of this president. And I know he's not going to do it, and I'm going to be doomed to be disappointed in his legacy. And he's not going to undo the war on drugs because it was done by a Democratic president. All I want from President Barack Obama is to end the war on drugs. That's
all I want. I can't argue with you on that. I will say this, to me, in my opinion, that still is one of those things that was a sneak attack because it was advertised, for lack of a better word, as a morality thing. Drugs are bad, blah, 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 blah. You're going to have crack babies. They're going to be born addicted to crack. And now we're coming to find out that, yeah, that's pretty much a myth. Now we're coming to find out this isn't being equally distributed as you said it was going to be. This really so at the time that it was enacted, it had the benefit, as you said, of having the moral high ground. Now we're starting to recognize, it wasn't until 2008 that we started to realize, you know what, black people are really being targeted with these high interest mortgages. So now in 2014, 2015, we're starting to realize more so than ever, you know what, this hasn't benefited the nation at all except for the prison industrial complex, the school to prison pipeline, all of that type. Like, this is, again, a sneak attack that was launched at us that we didn't know at the time that we need to be fighting this.
But because, Sean, we as a people and Took, we don't pay attention to policy anymore.
I agree.
So it goes right back to our original topic of what Jason Whitlock is talking about.
Right.
And our failure to teach millennials what's important. That we sat around and waited for the dream to be fulfilled.
Right. And Tiki, and I forgot, what was the brother, what's the brother's name on the call?
Sean.
Once again, you both yours and Tiki's angle, that it was right on point. My point is, and I can't lose while I still got it, that question that Tiki had was really deep, was that what do we give millennials when we have nothing to give? And we're at a position to where we can't continue to tread water because we keep thinking. We have to give them something. So what can we give them? What is it that we, what call to duty must we have to get this generation in a positive direction? Something must be done. But considering we're seeking to give them something and we haven't been taught, we don't have the experience, what is our angle? What is our attempt at turning this in the right direction? That's just the question that I pose.
Can I take a stab at this?
Yes.
And this is something, and y'all going to have to put me out in a minute because I'll talk about this all day. Tiki will tell you. but this is something that I'm starting to think of. And first off, I think we're going to have to take more of a active role in seeing the change in our community. I don't feel like, I feel like to some extent, and please let this come across correctly because I do not want any, I don't want y'all to get any kind of mail about me. I feel like to some extent, we almost tend to act like spoiled children. Please hear my heart. Please hear my heart.
Yes.
Saying, fix this, fix this, instead of getting the gumption and taking the initiative to fix this ourselves. Okay.
Right.
I keep harping on this because I know too many people that's been affected by this.
Right.
As far as the high interest loans, that was horrible. But at the same time, how many wealthy, well-to-do people do we know that are set in a position where they can start their own banks, their own financial institutions within our community and rectify this? You know, you understand what I'm saying? I live in Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, and it is by far the largest area that I've ever been in, and I have to drive almost 20 miles to find a black-owned bank. But our celebrities and our people, they're quick to start headphone companies.
Right.
Everybody wants a shoe deal. Everybody wants to make clothes.
But you know what, Sean? When you look back at that, and what's the revelation that's coming from out of that is a lot of it was that we went and we entrusted a lot in the black banks that got us into those high interest loans.
I don't know if it was the black bank.
Right. But see, my thing is, I would love to see us work on getting our mentalities together. And I'm going to say that because I have a whole lot of experience in that, bro. And I'm that Generation X that had it all wrong. So if I was to teach these millennials something, I would be teaching them the wrong thing. Because I'm part of that generation that fell for the dangling carrot. And that's why all those high interest loans happen, because you done came to a brother who barely got a piece of a job, and all of a sudden now we finna move you out into this big old house that you can get these barbecues to with the family and pick out the SUV that you need, and we'll balloon payment for later. Don't worry about it. And we have to teach this generation that that dangling carrot is not as attractive as it appears to be. The fall down date and the play date is coming. I'm going to tell you something, and you talk about, and I was ear hustling, and I heard y'all talk about getting y'all financials together. And let me share with you something that a wise woman taught me and helped me get my credit together. Bottom line was, you know, take your time and pay off the little accounts at a time, and don't run for the high interest loans that deceive you in getting it all together real quick, fast, and a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to teach this generation to get over what was so appealing to us in our time and that microwave mentality, and getting everything so quick, fast, and a hurry, and not willing to invest in taking time and doing things the correct, productive way. And when we can do that, then we can go forward and, you know, not fall for all the pyramid schemes and all the other things that us good, passionate black folks usually fall for.
Hey, Sean, let me ask you something. Do you have on a headpiece or an earpiece or something?
Yeah, I do. Is it bothering you?
Okay, yeah, it's giving us an echo, a real bad one.
Better.
Yeah, yeah. Much better. Thank you so much. Here's my thing. I think to your original question, Tuke, we have to change our message. Just this morning, I was invited to come to Selma to speak at a church conference in April. So both of you on this call know me and my relationship to church, and all to find that little information hilarious.
Yeah.
But I haven't been invited to be on a panel and to speak. And, you know, I was talking to my aunt about it, you know, and my reservations, and she said, you know what, they didn't invite you to preach. They didn't ask you for a sermon or to deliver a message. They asked you to speak. So go speak. And so that kind of lifted the burden of concern from me. Yes. And I'm quite comfortable now in the fact that I'm going to do it. And I had decided that, you know, they told me, hey, your speech will be for 20 to 40-year-olds. And I decided, well, I'm going to talk about what I know.
Right.
Because far be it from me to open my mouth to speak about things that I don't know.
Ooh,
and
Lord.
Here's what I know. In the black community, we have been teaching our millennials and younger generation Xers, if anything at all, we've been teaching them wrong things. If we taught them anything, whatever we taught them, and this is not for everybody, we taught them the wrong things. What I would like to see us do is, when you have an opportunity to teach, when you have an opportunity to share information, that we start to change the message. We start to get millennials, and some of them are adults now and starting to have the next generation. We teach them to focus on getting the policies and laws changed that are impactful to their lives, that we teach them to take their economics to the polls and their morality to church, that we teach them to keep women's bodies off of the ballot box.
Yeah, just come on in.
That we teach them that the war on drugs is not a war on drugs. The war on drugs is a war on you. You're the commodity. There is no heroin or cocaine out there more valuable than you.
Ooh, what'd you say?
You're free labor. So how do we do it? That's how we do it. We tell them the straight up, uncut, raw truth. Stop worrying about if somebody called you a nigga. Stop
right.
worrying about if somebody thinks your blackness is unattractive. Don't give a damn about who thinks your lips are too big. Pick up the autobiography of Malcolm X and learn to love yourself. And don't
right.
let anybody love you harder than you love you.
Yeah, all right.
And when you find that you are a person that you love hard enough that you will fight for your own self, for your own rights, for the rights of your descendant, then we'll start to move back to getting done the work that has been left undone.
Mm.
But right now, we're fighting over the N-word.
Right.
We're fighting over a chant on the SAEs or SEAs, whatever the hell they are. That's what we're
right.
fighting about.
I think you
so
used
brutality and the murders, that's worth fighting about. Fight about that.
Right. You said valuable. Tiki, Sean, would you say we've taught this generation, or at least what we did pass on, was our obsession with being accepted? Rather than having, see, I don't think this generation has a sense of valuing those essential core things like family, things of that nature that is essential in making the movement mean anything or have any substance to it. We can't do this thing with single families. We can't do this thing with, you know, that we have to get the core of the home together and all those other things, but whether it be materialistic value or anything of that nature, I don't believe that we did the best job in passing on the sense of valuing or devaluing, that is, the acceptance position. And whether that falls back on because we didn't want to be rebel rousers or, you know, troublesome folks or whatever the case is, we wanted to the acceptance of a certain Anglo-Saxon sector of folks, you know, and to be honest with you, I'm sure both of you have seen on social media, whether it be Common, which I was very disturbed, disappointed with, who said that something in the sense that, and you guys correct me, that racism doesn't exist anymore, or race, or Indian racism lies on us being forgiven or seeking the forgiveness of white folks, whatever the case is, it wasn't a position of having self-pride. And I don't think this generation is valuing self-pride, and it's not really their faults, and we need to quit pointing the finger at them.
I don't disagree
no.
with you. I think that there were a lot of factors involved in that deterioration. Everything from media portrayal to, like you were saying, again, hear me, I was raised in a single-parent home, but a single-parent home. There were a lot of times my mom was just too busy working to have conversations with me, so I had to figure some stuff out on my own as I grew. I think for whatever reason, this generation to some extent has kind of been left to its own devices. Some of that is, again, because of policies that kind of tied the hands of parents. We grew up at a time where, you know, parents could punish their children. I'm not saying abuse, I'm saying punish. However they saw fit. Not so much the case
right.
anymore. You know, so we've taken the parents, and to some extent, the parents' ability to parent, ironically, while fussing at the parents' ineffectiveness in parenting.
yeah.
And so now we live in a society where, you know, children don't have to be taught anything because children have become everything.
What?
Meaning children have no longer become a part, they're no longer a part of the family. The family is subservient to the children. And we justify that to some extent because, you know, children are younger, they're innocent, they're defenseless, they're helpless. But I think that is a very much American issue. So we're kind of, it's kind of a, it's a very interesting point. I don't disagree. I wholeheartedly agree. But I think that that's the topic for another show. You let me know so I can call in.
You know, in Jason Whitlock's monologue, he referred to the millennials as the selfie generation. And I was just like, wow, how true is that? That is truly the selfie generation. And honestly, and I'm not being critical here, Generation Xers, but I do find it interesting when Generation Xers do get wholeheartedly into the selfie thing. I'd be like, really? You know? And just kind of getting away from the topic for a minute, but I found that hilarious. I mean, you know, the selfie generation, just meaning what his reference was, that they're selfish. They're self-absorbed. We have not taught them to care about anything outside of themselves. You know, we have not taught them to give a damn about anything but what they want.
Mm-hmm.
Their own instant self-gratification. I want, I want, I want. I know people that I went to school with, and I hear them talk about their children and what they give them and what they get them. And I think to myself, that's probably why I don't like your child. And I know that's not a good thought, but, and it's not something I'm blaming the child for, but, I mean, you guys are connected to me in social media. You know, right. I'll say in a moment that this is not the fault of the child, it's the fault of a punk-ass parent, right?
Exactly.
So if you're going to let your child lead you, tell you what to buy them, tell you what to get them, when to get it for them and how to, then isn't that kind of teaching them to be self-absorbed? Now, if you are in a position to afford to give your child all the comfort of life, have some balance in that thing. Teach them some kindness and humility. Teach them some charity. If you don't balance out the sneakers with being made to go do community service, then you're going to have a selfie child. Your child is always going to have an expectation that you give them, that society gives them, that they can just want and they shall receive and they don't have to work for anything. Now, that is the responsibility, whether it's Generation X, baby boomers, or what have you. That is a parent's responsibility. It is not until I've gotten in my 40s that I even consider that I have any type of wisdom that I could share in raising a child. Before now, who knows what I would have raised, you know? But, yeah, but now I don't, you know, I don't want any. I never did, but I'm just saying. I'm more qualified now to raise one than I have ever been in any point in the history of my life. But you cannot get it done by being your child's best friend. And that's the reason I'm not connected to children in social media. Can't do it. Cannot do it, Sean. So, Took, Sean, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back, and we'll wrap up Black Millennials.
Be right back.
You're inside the Cafe Mahogany with your host, Kiki and Sue, the place where we talk about what we don't talk about. For those of you that could not join us inside the cafe, we still want to hear from you. The number to call is 516-595-8113. So pull up a seat, order a drink, and tell us what's on your mind.
Are you a business owner looking to expand your business nationally? Well, join the hottest internet radio network, Team Broadcasting. Advertise your business or organization on this program or others. Choose from a winning lineup: Selma Toro's Baseball, Toro Talk, Bridging the Gap, The Lonely Hearts Cafe, and Cafe Mahogany. We look forward to partnering with your business to help you grow, whether it's locally, regionally, or nationally. Contact us for more information, 334-505-1940, or send us an email at yourteambroadcasting.com, 334-505-1940, or yourteambroadcasting.com. We look forward to partnering with you.
You're inside the Cafe Mahogany with your host, Kiki and Sue, the place where we talk about what we don't talk about. For those of you that could not join us inside the cafe, we still want to hear from you. The number to call is 516-595-8113. So pull up a seat, order a drink, and tell us what's on your mind.
We're back, Cafe Mahogany. We're talking about the Black Millennials and have we let them down? Looking over the blog from the great Jason Whitlock, who brought up this very sensitive and powerful subject. And I'm going to ask the question, and we had some very powerful discussion actually from the last segment. Tiki and Sean, so I'm going to ask you, what is our next steps? And like so many other things, and as Sean said before, not just in this, but in many other aspects and just growing a child and growing a generation, we're always accused of talk. We always got a good speech. You know what I'm saying? Tiki going out to the church and she's talking good. And while she was at the church, I'm pretty sure the Reverend came and gave a very inspirational speech, but everybody just talking. So what you going to do, you know, and how, what do we address, you know, the millennials that approach us and say, what are you going to do? Help us do something. How do we go about doing? What do we do? What is the next step in what we do? And that can be the most trying sort of position right there. We all have
Thank you.
Okay, we're back.
All right,
Took.
Yes.
Okay. So you were asking, what are we going to do? We're going to talk. We're going to change the message. All you can do is talk.
Okay.
You can't. And when you're asking, you know, other than talking, what are we going to do? What do you mean? You know, specifically, what do you have in mind?
Well, what I have in mind is, you know, reiterating and reinforcing the essence and importance of the subject matter, or bottom line, this show, period. You know, is in the sense that we talk about what we don't talk about. And what I have in mind is, this is yet again one of the taboo subjects in our community, is one, addressing that we need to get up off our butts because we ain't doing nothing. And two, how do we go about, I really believe it is a matter of brainstorming that the communities need to get together, and we need to entertain each other's ideas on how we go about in doing something. But first and foremost, we have to talk about it. And this is a subject that we generally don't talk about.
This is true.
And you went into the church in that particular community, that needs to be done on more than a local level. You know, and if that can be done.
I haven't gone yet. There's something I'm going to do in April.
Okay.
That's a future-dated thing. So that hasn't happened yet. But the point of it was, aside from just talking, is changing what you're saying. Changing what you're talking about.
I would see a whole lot of hope. And I would feel we would be going in a definite right direction if.
Well, here's the thing with that, too. Educators need to care enough to change the conversation, not to just educate, but to take it a step further than that, to care about the message that our students are receiving. Just don't go in and whatever's textbook. You know, we're going to learn algebra today. We're going to learn English literature today. But take it a step further. Have a real conversation with your students.
Yeah, I think that's on point. My point before got cut is that I wish, just as you are booked for April, if we can get folks throughout this country to be booked for April, I think we started in the right direction. You know,
be booked for April. What do you mean?
What I'm saying is that you have an appointment. You have an assignment. Everything is in order for you to go ahead and start making the change in the right direction. In order, you know, we need to prepare and be one willing to go about and accept that assignment. Just as you went and you said you talked to your aunt or whoever it is that you talked to, you know, whatever it took to get you over the hump and be willing to go ahead and to go into a place that you talked to me and Sean before about your feelings about in going into the church in itself. You were willing to make that sacrifice to go in and go into a place that's environmentally uncomfortable for you for the sake of this very important cause. If we can get that on the books for others, if we can get other tikis to be pointed throughout the country and do their part collectively, we can start this thing in the right direction. But it's not just going to happen with it just a little sprinkle here and there. That's my point. That, you know,
we got the same point then. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. In order for us to get it started, we have to accept the assignment. You know what I'm saying? So otherwise, we all talking. Because what's happening is everybody coming and they talking to you, Tiki, about it, and then they say, now you go ahead and go do it. No, you do it.
Right.
You do it.
So, you know, I mean, and it's like anything else, you know, folks are fearful. You know, there's anything you can do that's headed in the right direction and that's in a positive nature is very positive for the movement. But doing nothing is the most detrimental thing that we're guilty of.
That is true.
Yeah. Sean, you still
there? No, Sean dropped.
Okay, Sean dropped off.
He may come back. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
so,
I don't know, and I think to Jason Whitlock's point on black millennials for this whole generation, and they are becoming adults now. So, you know, how effective is that? Our ability to ensure that the message that they pass along to the next generation is the one that has been void in the last two. You know, in the last two generations.
Wow.
Because so the millennials are having babies now.
Right. So you would feel that our lack of tutelage, we've received it honestly, or, you know, I mean, not that, you know, we seek to solely to point the finger, but we do have to identify from somewhere where we went wrong.
We do. And I think where we went wrong was Generation X starts in 1965. They were born into the movement, but they were babies in that movement. And boomers, baby boomers, by and large, and this not, does not apply to everyone, some parents, some households were very vigilant in what they taught their children. But the majority assumed that telling their children about the horrors of the civil rights movement, that was enough. It let them know that it happened and we overcame, and somehow we were supposed to absorb the plan, the next steps, by osmosis or something, is the fundamental failure, which we would have to now say is three generations old. Baby boomers, Xers, and now millennials.
Yeah, it's you know, like so many other things that we see passed down through our families, you know, we need to break the chain. We got to break the chain at some point. And, you know, I personally, and I think we as a generation shouldn't feel content with allowing the millennials to absorb this this approach of contentment, of the lack of, and to be honest with you, you know, we did a show a couple weeks back on our Selma show, which you know, I got a lot of feedback about how educational it was, and that really hit home to me about not only what we know, Tiki, but what we don't know. And there was so many that learned so much from you and Togo's personal experience. How does that happen? That's not going to happen in the schools. And it don't take me, and you know, for all those who are listening throughout Radio Land, and those who know me know I don't have a racist bone in my body, so please, I know there's going to be some that misconstrue this, but whatever. The point of the matter is, the things that we learned from Tiki and Togo that night, we couldn't learn from a white person because you aren't authenticated to give personal experiences on what affects and what the experiences, both positive and negative, of black people. And for us to push our children in the direction for that to be taught to them by anyone but not only black folks, but the value, again, of learning our history through our own people and relatives is important. And again, about talking about what we don't talk about, if we can push to get families to get back together, because we've lost even the Sunday get-togethers, we've lost those get-togethers of family to where we shared stories, and then in sharing stories we learned a lot about ourselves, and then we valued ourselves, and you know, there was something nurturing about that. And you know, I would just like us, that's something that we can do locally within our own homes. And even I'm, you know, I have to be honest and I got to keep it real on here, I'm doing that myself with my own family right now, trying to get family back together how we remember Big Mama and them doing it, and the memories that we have. And it's a sad scenario when we look about it, Tiki, when we sitting down and I find myself, when I'm telling stories to the millennials today, I'm telling Big Mama them stories. Where are your stories at?
Right.
What are your stories?
And here's the thing. The stories I don't have a problem with because, like I said, I grew up on them. I have the stories. I have a lot of them.
Right.
And there is no issue or problem with the stories. I think they're great.
Right.
What's missing are fundamental truths.
Right.
Education.
Mm-hmm.
About work that is still undone.
All right.
That's what's missing from the stories.
Mm.
That's how we get to the prison pipeline. That's how we get to the war on drugs.
Right.
That's how we get to the changes in voter laws in this country. By not paying attention to what's fundamentally important, by letting one another off the hook. In a lot of ways, Generation X let down the millennials because the baby boomers let down Generation X. But let's be clear, that does not absolve anybody of personal responsibility.
Right.
So what I learned about personal finances as an adult, the thing is, I took the initiative to educate,
right,
to learn, to find out. Right?
Right.
So that is where opportunity and personal responsibility met.
Right, right. That is so deep. We have to get out of our shame and take some accountability, you know, because we're hiding behind it and it's just going to continue. We have to stop the bleeding. And, you know, what you're describing is exactly that point, is that we have to stand and say, okay, you know, I didn't learn to get out of debt until I was an adult. But guess what? I'm out of debt today, and how many can say that?
Right.
Right. As long as we get there, we're gonna take a quick break, and then we're gonna wrap up with Southern Light. You're listening to Cafe Mahogany.
You're inside the Cafe Mahogany with your host, Tiki and Sook, the place where we talk about what we don't talk about. For those of you that could not join us inside the cafe, we still want to hear from you. The number to call is 516-595-8113. So pull up a seat, order a drink, and tell us what's on your mind.
Are you a business owner looking to expand your business nationally? Well, join the hottest internet radio network, Team Broadcasting. Advertise your business or organization on this program or others. Choose from a winning lineup. Selma Toro's Baseball, Toro Talk, Bridging the Gap, The Lonely Hearts Cafe, and Cafe Mahogany. We look forward to partnering with your business to help you grow, whether it's locally, regionally, or nationally. Contact us for more information, 334-505-1940, or send us an email at yourteambroadcasting.com, 334-505-1940, or yourteambroadcasting.com. We look forward to partnering with you.
Guys, we're back. You've been listening to Tiki and Took and the Cafe Mahogany.
Yes, powerful show tonight, Teek. Powerful show. What did you think about the show tonight?
I think we're going to need more than one show to get it all done.
You might be right. I believe so, because after I address all of these inbox messages that keep popping up, and that's what drives me nuts. I have to find a way to encourage people and let them know that there's a comfort zone. They're welcome to call in and have all these questions addressed over the air. So I think we will need a part two of this show coming very soon.
Yes, I think it's necessary.
Yes, very much so. We thank you for tuning in tonight to Cafe Mahogany. Once again, the Black Millennials, what can we do? We all must do better. We look forward to hearing from you next week on Cafe Mahogany. We'll talk to you next Wednesday. Be safe.
Thank
Be good.
You. Have a good night.
Company, what do you want from me and my scars? Everybody lack confidence. Everybody lack confidence. How many times my potential was anonymous? How many times the city making me promises? So I promise this.
You're listening to Team Broadcasting.